First, get rid of the jacket. Well, thank you. It's wonderful to be back in Tucson. You know, I lived here for a little over a year researching this new book I'm working on my great aunt, the Saint of Cabora. Some of you may have heard me read about her here and there, talk about her, and I can tell you some Teresita gossip later to fill you in. I thought I would sort of give you a little bit of a mixed bag of stuff, a little poetry and a little bit maybe from Wandering Time, and I wanted to end with a chapter from one of my Tijuana books that I haven't read much in this area. It's hard for me to read it, but I think I save it for special events, and this seems like a really special event for me, so I will share it with you. I just wanted to share one thing. People talking the last couple of days, I've been on tour, so I'm a little bit rocky at this point because I've been doing city after city, and it's been a really strange experience because last time I came through, nobody cared at all, and this time I've come through, and there are all kinds of people, and I'm not sure what happened. And we were laughing in Oakland. The last time I passed through this one bookstore, there were two people in the audience, and one guy slept through my whole reading. And this time it was full, so I, you know. But anyway, a lot of people have been asking me about my writing, and it's strange to have people care suddenly, you know. People want to know, and I've been trying to sort of formulate a response, and somehow some of the best responses I can come up with are what other writers have said that I try to take as a credo. I was more than delighted to be upstairs hiding in John Anderson's office, if you know him. One of my heroes, whom I have never met, by the way. But when I was teaching at Harvard, I found a booklet of his for a quarter, Helpful Hints on Writing Poetry, if you know that book. And he has one writing rule, which is remember the world of ghosts and small gestures. And I think that's such a beautiful sentence, and it sums up everything I would like to capture in my work, because I think that the small moments and the passing memories are what is really richest. And just one other little thing before I get into my reading, a little quote from Erica Funkhauser, which I think is so beautiful that it's become one of my new writing works. I'm starting to get this kind of Bible of writing rules, but it's a little phrase from one of her poems that says, "To pay attention as lovers pay their debts, not in currency, but in kindness." And that seems to me the ultimate writing rule right now. And the last one I want to share with you is something Etheridge Knight said, which sticks in my heart and actually informed my attempts to wrestle with the border issues in my border books. He said, "You have to be telling people essentially, I love you, or you have no basis for your art." So just so you know, that's where I'm coming from, or trying to. I'm not always successful at it. I thought I would read you some poetry, and I'm not sure which poems to read. How about you guys? What poem should I read? Let's have some community feedback here. Well, Really? It baffled the audience right off the bat. They want me to read like my most strange poem. Boy's Life? You guys are picking all the ones that put me on the spot. To heck with you. I'll work my way up to it. This is a poem called I Tried to Write a Poem About This Once a Year for 13 Years, which turns out to be a more humorous title than I had intended. I meant it seriously. I kept trying to write a poem about this experience. You mentioned the absurdities of manhood. You know, one of the rules in my family was to be macho. So my dad took me a lot of places to be macho, and we experienced a lot of very strange and unpleasant things, which apparently is what macho is. And by the way, that thing, I've said this before, but I just have to tell the audience, the thing about the border in my heart, I've used this sort of as a catchphrase that, you know, there's a barbed wire fence dissecting my heart, because my parents, being American and Mexican, my mother was all American, my dad was all Mexican, and they raised me both ways at once. I had to be American and Mexican. But apparently the Mexican people didn't quite understand the metaphor, because when I got to Mexico City and was interviewed, what they published in the newspaper in Mexico City was, if you cut open Luis Urrea's chest with a knife, you'll find a Border Patrol truck idling in his ribs. Which is one of the greatest things I've ever had written about me, but I don't know what it means. So, anyway, this is a poem about one of those macho experiences, which was a marathon drive I went on with my dad in Mexico. I tried to enter the car. My father driving, interior dim in late desert night, lit by the dash by the pumping radio. Rancheras beat across Chihuahua's haunted heat. How my little cousin Melba smelled of hair and flesh. How my aunt drowsed and my uncle and father murmured in the front seat. Manly mysteries I stayed awake for. Cojones. Cigarettes. Bulls and menudo. How late it was. How my father drove for 20 hours. To show the dark of the dunes before us, vague in moonlight, how blue-red lightning flashed in the distance, so subtle at first, you couldn't tell if they were there or your eyes were throwing nerve sparks from no sleep. It took a minute to see the bolts were on the ground, how I said, "Look out, Papa." How he slowed down and how I felt so powerful at that instant. The words I spoke could pull the eternal machine of my father back from his speed. How slow we came around the bend, and what we saw. I always tried to show the glass, the liquids spread that threw back light, oil, glass, and blood. Men ran the far side of the road, frantic flashlights probed among desert trees, mesquite, palo verde, ocotillo. "What is this?" my father said. And my uncle, muy Mexicano, ordered my aunt to hide Melba's head under her arm and turn away. And the solid wall of metal and meat before us. The split-level passenger bus welded head-on to the semi, 12-wheeled, 18-wheel drive, dead still sticking, the shoes of the bus driver hanging from the upraised tomb of the dashboard. The colorful, fleshy garlands looping from the windows like the party was about to begin. The engine of the bus knocked out the back, lying silent behind, smoke, odd mounds scattered indistinct in the flash, flash, flashing. And the smaller details that never wanted to fit, the one cop swinging a lantern alone, how he begged us to get out of there, how he said they passed on the curve and 70, 80 miles an hour, and they're searching the trees for a baby that went out the window. And how we drove on through the night. There was nothing between us but the radio, the tally as it was counted, bland voices bouncing across black lands, 100 miles from any city, one ambulance at each end of the highway, and how we'd hear it coming 4 miles away, watch it hurtle, recede, return. And I could never quite capture the schoolgirls. On a trip into Mexico, coming home, 15, 20 schoolgirls, all my age, and you could see them in their uniforms holding hands. They stood in rough circle out among the cactus, gray as ash in the half light. They were singing a hymn, the national anthem, the school song, I don't know. All these voices, tiny as ghosts, bounced off the metal, singing and singing, every voice as we left. Stolen by the wind. That's one of those pleasant He-Man experiences. No. Thank you. Thank you.